Okay, well, we'll continue on today, and trying to sort of sense the mood of the group. Yeah, it's a little bit, you kind of lost it by now, pretty much.
Well, you know, I'm seeing formation. I'm thinking we're going to do that Beyonce video. No?
Yeah, we're
going to
have a workout now.
Yeah. If you can please just don't move your heads when I...
We're all going to stand up and everybody's going to sway.
Because we're too busy.
Well, so we have, I don't know how long it will take. We won't take more than an hour for sure, but we may take less with this segment. So, and then following this segment, we do what?
Go to the chapel.
We're going to go to the chapel. All right. So we'll have a 15-minute break after that. So some of you I know are ready to party, I can tell. But you actually have a little bit more of engagement of your mind and body and spirit. Then you can let it all go eventually tonight.
If you could remove Sally from the mix, things would calm down a little.
But she is an inaugural monk. You can't remove inaugural monks.
She has tenure.
So, as you recall, last year at the gathering, we did a survey, and so I sent out a couple of weeks ago an executive summary of that. Some of you may have had a chance to read that. So why do a survey? We are an experimental order. We've been around over a decade, and we've grown from a pretty small little tiny group to a sort of medium-sized order, 39 members, and we'll have more today, right? So in addition, there are friends and inquirers that, we're not part of the survey, but what I'm saying is that, in a sense, the order is beyond those 39. It really maybe moves into 100 people if you can count friends and folks like that. So the survey at the beginning, you won't remember this, but this is what it said. Monks in the Oriental Orthodox Order are responsible for their own spiritual development, yet they are given support and guidance from other members of the order. This voluntary survey of the monks and postulants is designed to assist the abbots in understanding, supporting, and guiding members in their spiritual praxis. Another way to kind of put those sentences is we want to value the uniqueness of each monk and also to value the uniqueness of the order. So that's kind of why we did this. And what I want to do is hit the highlights here of the survey. And and then think a little bit about questions and that kind of thing that it may bring up. So a reminder, as a order, these are our core values. We have three: transmission of the wisdom of Jesus, transformation of human consciousness and being through the practice of interiorized monasticism, work for the creation of a culture of contemplative wisdom. So I developed the survey. It went through a number of renditions that the abbots helped with to sort of get it like we wanted it. And it was administered April the 10th at the gathering, and then those monks and postulants who were not here were mailed the survey. We had a good result of 72%. I've never done a survey, but I understand that's a pretty good result.
It's a very good result. Okay.
So 28 of 39 completed the survey. there were two parts to it, if you can remember. One part was formation, about your own development as a spiritual person, as a religious person. The other was your practice, both past and present. So, first part, formation, and we had a little bit on demographics here. Average age 63. We were split of those who turned in the survey. Exactly 50% male, 50% female, 96% Anglo, 71% are at that time currently employed. And these were the primary areas of employment: art, business, education, healthcare, and ministry. 29% are retired.
You know, Blake, I think that says a lot in terms of 50% male and 50% female, because when I look in, when I occasionally go to churches, it's so predominantly attended by females.
Yeah, it is a little surprising, I think.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's a little surprising. Denominational affiliations, 64% Episcopalian, 32% Baptist. Who could have imagined, right?
Still
growing. You can't stop it. Once you get it started, you can't stop it.
You guys multiply.
25% Methodist. 15 different Christian denominations were listed. 64% are currently members of a church. And of those that are currently members, 61% were in an Episcopal church. 36% do not currently have church membership. Ordinations. So 29% of the members are ordained ministers. The ordinations are held in the Apostolic Catholic, Baptist, and Episcopal denominations. 18% of the monks are currently employed in a Christian church or a Christian institution. And I think that actually is a low number. I think we actually have more than 18%. Current positions that are listed are abbot, dean, minister, priest, and sister. And then 18% said that they, though they're not currently employed, they have been previously employed in a church or a Christian institution, and the positions were dean, missionary, minister, pastor, professor, sexton. So combined those, about a third at some point have been employed by the church or Christian institution. Isn't it interesting to know about yourselves, right? We're always interested, you know, right? That's one reason the Myers-Briggs type indicator is the most popular psychological instrument, more because you're learning about yourself, right? This is learning about the order. Affiliations outside of the Christian tradition. So this is where it, in some ways, kind of gets more interesting, because, you know, we certainly have that, right? We have affiliations that are outside of Christianity. 25% have some kind of affiliation or membership in a religious organization outside of Christianity. These were listed here. The Maulana Sufi Order, Shadowliya Sufi Order, and then the Diamond Approach, which Allison talked about earlier today, right?
And I would add SRF to that.
Okay, and it wasn't on the survey, though. But actually, this is a part of, you know, it's, if, you know, it, we can see it just in our talk today, right? That this is happening, so... half of those who said that they had affiliations outside of the Christian tradition listed the order, which is very interesting. So yes. That, you know, so, and actually, that's one of the, you know, issues in the past we've kind of talked about. You know, in what sense is the order Christian? It's been one of the questions we've wrestled with at times. Order activities. So again, we're still in formation. So we listed several order activities and to kind of see how we participate as members. Everybody that took it said that they have had a spiritual director within the order. So either a monk or an abbot serving as a spiritual director at some point in their experience. 71% of those surveyed attend often or rarely miss the order's annual gathering here today. Okay, so we hate to miss this, but sometimes you have to. But that's a high number. 50% participate often or rarely miss the annual Praxis Wisdom Schools. Okay. If you recall, when you took it, you had never participate, sometimes participate. And then there was a middle category, and then it was often, and then rarely miss. Okay, so those first three were focusing on often or rarely miss. 46% indicated they used the Anamkara Facebook page, so about half of us are in that and use that. 36% participate often or rarely miss order or praxis retreats. And then 39% have participated in at least one work day at the Elwood Retreat Center. And I thought that was a high. I don't believe it. Okay.
We'll give them another chance.
I think they're just imagining they participated in that work.
They want you to think they did.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I think we might have said too much about it. They've
been okay, so part two, practice. So this was a snapshot, you know. April of 2015, you were asked to talk about your previous week, what it was like. Okay. So what you'll see in this, I think, is interesting. A great deal of eclativity, and yet there are some definite patterns here. Very interesting. So we counted up the number of minutes each person was asked to put, how many minutes per day last week did you do something. Okay, so that the average was 45 minutes. All right. The four most common practices during that previous week were meditation and silence, the highest. Not surprising for us, I don't think, right? Probably wouldn't be surprising. Reading, and that would be some kind of contemplative reading, not reading novels or magazines or whatever, right? Music, chanting, 29%, and then prayer, 25%. Then 36% indicated some form of physical activity as a part of their contemplative work, and there were, you know, things like yoga, that kind of thing. And that's, you know, not a lot, right? I mean, only a third mm-hmm. can do that. So many other practices were mentioned. A lot of things were put down. And these are some examples: ritual, writing, conversation, study, observation, and reflection. Isn't this fun? You like it? Sally, you don't? No.
I'm sorry.
Sally,
let's
come
sing,
on.
Let's sing, Blake. Let's sing.
Sally, you're the only one.
I'm the only one. I'm sure I am.
So here's a template of our daily practice. if we, so I just sort of, okay, looking at all that, so it's a sort of, and this sort of reflects what we're going to do, what we do in chapel, doesn't it?
Yes.
Invocatory prayer and chant, Lectio Divina, centering prayer, close with a prayer and chant. Okay, so then we compared what we do with historical monastic practices, and these, what is it, seven categories are historical practices that one might think about in the long history of monasticism and Christianity. Withdrawal from society into a monastic or intentional community, or as a hermit. That number has to be high. I think it was misunderstood. This is the way this was actually written was withdrawal from society permanently. Okay, I think some thought of it as, oh, sometimes I withdraw for a retreat or something like that. I think so. That's why that's that high. We do have some that have withdrawn from society permanently, right? But I don't think we have that many. Okay. Prayer, 50% had sustained a practice over many years. Austerity, 25%. Oh, we're not very austere, huh? Work, monastic work, some form of charity or service, 86%. So we're engaged, right? Mm-hmm. We are priests in the world. We're living up to our name in that sense, it seems like. Contemplative reading, 71%. Pilgrimage, all right, we have over a third that do pilgrimages or have done pilgrimages, part of their work. Liturgical. This number, I think, is also high. I think it was misunderstood or misread. This was regular daily worship in community. So every day in community doing worship. Okay. Even growing up Baptist, I didn't do it every day. We did it Sunday all day and Wednesday, but not every day. Fall out of your chair. Okay. Then we had this tree here that most of you probably have seen. It's the tree of contemplative practices. It wasn't in the survey, but the categories were in the survey. So I took the categories from the tree, and you could check off, you know, never done this to I'm a teacher of it, okay? So there were five different things you could check. So of these, whatever that is, 70 practices. And then you could also add practices. So it was pretty extensive. So here on this slide, we're just looking at monks that are adepts or teachers, and they're very skilled at these practices. And the top one is stillness. I don't have a handout for that. You can't see this, but these branches represent, you know, stillness is up there, and there's categories under stillness, and then ritual, and categories there, and then creative, and then, right? Okay, so of the stillness categories, like meditation, centering, 68%, ritual work, like retreats, doing ceremonies, 46%. Again, these are adept or teachers, so highly skilled folks, right? Not that you've done it once, but you're pretty experienced with it. Creative, 38%. Generative, which, let's see, give you some examples. I don't have it on here. Don't have it there. 35% activist, 30% relational, 25% again movement at the bottom of the list. Right. That's why we decided we had to get the cardio in.
Hard work.
There you go. The top seven practices from the tree, where one was adept or expertise. Meditation, 86%. Establishing sacred space, 71%. Retreats, 64%. Centering, 64%. Lexio Divina, 61%. Music, 54%. Quieting the mind, 54%. Range of practices. Okay, so you kind of looked at, okay, you've got all these practices that you've attempted at least once. Okay, so on average, 20, we've attempted 20 practices at least once. So we're very eclectic, experimental, we're outgoing in that sense, right? But look at 9 practices on average that one is adept or expertise. So not only are we sort of, reaching far, we're also grounding some of this and being faithful to it. In other words, we've done it long enough that it's rooted in our practice. So in a sense, with the 20, you can say there's kind of spiritual tourism going on. But since there are practices that root in, you can't call it spiritual tourism, right? So the tourist just goes out, does it once or twice, and it sort of you get titillated, right? And then you come home and you don't do it. Okay, so that's not what it is. Titillated, yeah. generated from tradition other than Christianity. Okay, so
titillating sexuality.
So 96% indicated they participated in a spiritual practice from a non-Christian tradition. So almost everybody has done that in the order. And 32% are adept at that and have sustained it over a long period of time. To me, that's really interesting. Now, then you look at specifically which religions. The highest is Buddhism. The second is we've got nature-centered or pagan practice. Okay, it could be Native American, for example. Then 57% for Islam and Judaism, 54% for Hindu, 32% for Taoist, 6% for Baha'i. Okay, church attendance. All right.
Oh, well.
We're going to have to talk about it.
You just keep talking.
The perfect person.
So 32% of the monks attend in church every Sunday, basically. Okay.
That might be high.
We can probably point those out. Right. Isn't that the same number of Baptists that we have?
Yeah.
32% attended a few times or once or twice during the month. And 25% indicated they had not attended during the past year. Okay, so about a fourth. Well, exactly a fourth. Thank you. Then there was a section on needs. What are your needs for your practice to be sustained? And there were 5 different categories, and you ranked them. So the top 2 needs were community and discipline. The 3rd is motivation. The 4th, direction from another person. The 5th is knowledge. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So community and discipline. You might think about, what questions come out of that. And actually, some of our conversation this morning, wasn't it? Or when was it?
Last night.
Yeah.
About accountability?
Yeah, about accountability and how do we have community. Yeah. So that's something for us to ponder. And you might think about also how is community and discipline related? Yeah, are they related? Okay, so that's the end of the survey. Now I want to briefly provide a little bit of interpretation for the survey. See what you think about that. So I read an article recently by a sociologist by the name of Keenan, who, did you know him?
Okay.
Okay. And this is an article. I'm not sure what I'm missing, but it must be good. I mean,
it really, we don't either.
It's probably titillating. Or sexy. I mean, one of the two, right?
Well, she thought he was important.
Julie, wake up. So one of the ways to kind of explore this, you know, how do we as an order fit in with modern monastic movements in America? And are we a part of what some scholars are calling it new monasticism, new neo-monasticism? And Keenan is one of the sociologists who's done a little work in this, and he provides 10 characteristics of monasticism in the 21st century. So I'm going to list those in a second and show you how I think we kind of fit into some of these categories and see what you think about that too. Monasticism, derived from the Greek word monos, meaning alone, is defined here exclusively. These are his ways to define it. To incorporate all forms of vocational commitment to religious life. It's a very broad definition. So it would include, for example, the hermit, those, the cenobitical flight, those who are in community in a monastery or convent, and then more recently the inner city apostolates of households. At Truett Seminary at Baylor, we've had some of our seminarians, young Baptist seminarians, having households in the inner city and actually sharing their money. It's very interesting. Pooling their money and their resources, sort of ministering to people in their community. So this is something that's going on in America. So he's including those folks in that. Throughout the histories of the world, countless religious devotees have set apart their lives in but not of the world. So that's sort of one of our mottos. We're in but not of the world. In this essay, which was written in 2002, Keenan takes issue with some sociologists that say that monasticism will die during the 21st century. Some have noted that monasticism is out of touch with postmodern egalitarian democratic society because it's typically very rule-oriented with an autocratic kind of bureaucracy and top-to-bottom kind of authoritarianism. Keenan, however, predicts that it will survive, and he offers some characteristics as to what this will look like. And he also suggests that in a postmodern era, a monastic option is a kind of protest, which it has always been. Okay, so a protest to the materialistic, consumer-driven lifestyle that is attractive to so many. He notes that monasticism has always been experimental. We often talk about ourselves as experimental, which we certainly are in many different ways, but he notes that it's always experimental. It's both in the world but not of the world. It's contemplative and active, and it's seldom really ever walled off from everything. Even though it's a withdrawal from society, there's always some kind of interaction, interrelationship. He says the entire point of monasticism is not to be entirely at home within the world, and that is its scandal and its rebuke to power. So, very interesting article. I'd recommend that you take a look at it. And I have a few copies up here if anybody wants to borrow one. He gives 10 characteristics of what he calls the neo-monasticism, and it's a market model for this. So, borderless, globalized monasticism with cross-institute memberships. Sound a little familiar, right? Okay, so we are certainly not cloistered, right? We're borderless in that sense. We're without border. Are we global? Well, we've had, Canada's have been a part of this. Are we beyond that? We've taken trips to India and Africa, and what's happening there is unclear as how that might affect the order. I mean, it could be that we're global. Who knows? That would be very interesting and positive, wouldn't it? We do, of course, have cross-institute memberships. We're ecumenical. Over 15 different Christian denominations are represented. We are border crossers, right? And we have multiple religious identities, most of us. Over half have had multiple affiliations with Christian denominations, and one out of five have had at least four, been a part of at least four different Christian denominations. So our DNA is we are border crossers. Okay.
Hebrews.
Mm. And the word Hebrew means across, one who crosses over. Yeah. Mm. We're not Christian, we're Hebrews. So.
I have the book on the shelf, but I have not read it, The New Monasticism. Wow. Are you familiar with the book?
Who's written?
Adam.
I don't think
he knows, you just know everything. Like,
is that the one that Clay won?
Yeah.
That's a different one.
Yeah. What's out, and it's relatively new, from the last year.
Okay.
Are you familiar with what's going on out there with the new monasticism and how that... As I said, it's on the shelf, and actually...
Yeah, I think what most people...
I'm drawn to, but I don't even want to read it.
Usually the word new monasticism is talking about those inner-city households.
That like
that's typically what that is referring to. He's using it here in a sense of what's coming in the 21st century, and it's more broad, it's broader than that. Okay. Eclectic portfolios... modulized ways of doing the work. Okay, sound familiar? A module is something you take and then you put modules together and you can build something with that. Custom focus, monastic designer lifestyle. Well, we gave you a survey, right? We gave you a survey. In fact, we gave you two surveys last year.
Is your caftan a designer?
Yeah, exactly.
We have a personal rule of life that we design on our own.
Do you hear that? Say that again. Some of you can hear it.
We have a personal rule of life that we design on our own.
If the shoe fits...
That's customized designer.
If the shoe fits, okay.
You could have been phrased.
Yeah, you design your own rule.
Do you know what Keenan means by market model? Is he proposing an idea that's going to be attractive to the market, or?
Yeah, you know, he does, as I recall in the article, he doesn't exactly define that, but it seems to me that's the point, yeah. Okay. So it's an American kind of thing, right? That we want things to suit our needs. So, and that's the market, right?
Portfolio spirituality is the one that gets me.
Yeah. So, does that resonate with what you
have? Well, it does from the standpoint of, I mean. It's almost saying the same thing as modular, the way you describe modularized. We take from different traditions and create our own portfolio.
Yeah.
Spirituality.
Yeah. And of course, the, one of the things that the order has said from the beginning is you are responsible for your spiritual well-being. So in fact, that's a strength. You could also say every strength has a weakness to it as well. Now, I'm not at this point even looking at that, but so just because it's here and just because it's Hugh Fitz doesn't mean it's bad, even if we don't like the word market. Okay. All right, so.
You know what? You left off that survey that break down Enneagram numbers. I'm being funny.
Yes, I did. You're not being a two. You're not being helpful.
Wow.
And the fact that you have to tell somebody when you're being funny is kind of sad.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be. I'm just trying to be funny too. Okay.
You both have to tell when you're being funny. That's not good.
Flattering quickly.
All right, so yeah, we need to let's keep going. All right, so time limited religious ad hocery. Okay. A lifestyle approach. Okay. So time limited in that, in fact, we are of a certain age for the most part, right?
Oh my God, that's rude.
So, well, we have a few outliers, of course.
Quickly, basically.
Only 7% are below the age of 50, all right? 74% are in their 60s and 70s. The average age is 63. So it's a certain age, certain time. Not necessarily the case for monastic life. You might come in at the age of 20 and stay your whole life, right? This, I think, also has to do with it might be a phase, is what he's saying. In other words, it might be spiritually healthy for you to be a monk for 5 years and then not be a monk, or for 10 years and then not be a monk, okay? That's what he's saying. I'm not saying. I don't think you can get out of it. The abbots don't allow you to leave.
You can say you've left, but you haven't.
Deregulation.
Is that in contrast to the old model of the lifetime vows?
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, and in fact, I think, you know, probably the consensus is that for some people, if they leave, then it's healthy that we would bless them. We're not, right? So deregulation, relaxation of rules. I know this is a really strict group, but
this guy must be a Republican. Deregulation, decentralization.
Well, he's using the market language, right? It's market language. All right, so I'm tempted to say here it's very Baptistic. Baptistic, yeah. Priesthood of the believer, soul competency, the authority of the local. That's all Baptist stuff.
Confession is the first step to being healed. It's okay.
I'm being very scholarly here, not very professional.
I think it's interesting, like, really, I think all the Baptists in the group did respond to this survey, because otherwise the percentage wouldn't be so high, because there aren't that many Baptists in the whole group.
Right, yeah.
So I guess that says Baptists like to finish their surveys.
They're just good rule followers, okay? You can tell them to do something new.
We may not get to chapel tonight.
So just cut it off when it's time to go to chapel.
You're welcome to leave the room, man. I'm going to stay right here.
What's the takeaway
here? I've never had a student say that to me, actually.
It shows that Baptists like to finish their surveys.
Yeah. All right, we're almost done.
You got 5 minutes. Yeah.
No, you don't. You got one. Oh, do we?
Yeah. We have to.
Well, we will We will address that more appropriately here.
Yeah.
Okay, so
the wine after
6
that.
Through 10, monastic marketization, niche marketing, and brand imaging. So we've been talking about websites. We've been talking about perhaps online courses. We laugh, and yet this is really what we do. Now, there's more to it than that, and there's a lot more to it than that. But that is a tool that we have used, and one might say, well, why wouldn't you, right? So we market ourselves to Christian and post-Christian contemplative seekers. That's what I would say. I'm going to repeat it. We market ourselves to Christian and post-Christian contemplative seekers. And we have a brand in a sense. We have seal, we have priest in the world icon, and that kind of thing. A dialectic of de-traditionalization and re-traditionalization. So many of us have, in our stories, have returned to Jesus. Okay, that was my story, and it's a number of stories. We left, some of us may or may not have left the church, but we had sort of left Jesus, in a sense, as a wisdom teacher, or a teacher. We had sort of given up the language of Jesus as Savior, dying for the sins of the world. We had lost that theology. But through re-traditionalization of the New Testament and also the Gospel of Thomas and other Gospels, we found Jesus again. We are living in a culture, obviously, that in which there's a lot of religious, what's sometimes called religious switching going on. And over the coming decades, Christians are expected to experience the largest losses from switching. So globally, one prediction is about 40 million people are going to switch into Christianity, and about 106 million are projected to leave Christianity, with most of those that are leaving Christianity joining the unaffiliated. Okay, so basically they're sometimes called the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, not like Linda.
Okay. I am not an Indian.
You know, sometimes I'm just the funniest person in the world. Y'all just can't quit laughing. I mean, I'm like a stand-up comedian.
I have no idea.
Sometimes I am so funny, I just kill myself. I'm sorry. I had vertigo.
We're giving you a hard time and you don't feel good. I'm sorry.
No kidding, man. this is the problem. You know, I was actually supposed to do this. It's my own fault. I didn't show up, right? So Friday morning. Think of how good they would have been Friday morning. And then Saturday evening.
That's right. No,
shit.
No, we have it on recording too.
Yeah, I may have been.
Jesus said.
I've been hanging around David Stringer too long. Okay, where are we? Monastic mergers.
Monastic swingers.
So alliances, we see we have alliances, we have friendships, we've often had at the order gathering Jewish, Muslim keynote speakers, we've had at times Buddhist interaction as well.
Native American,
exactly. So we have alliances. He didn't know about us, I don't think, but he you know, if he knew it, did, we would have put in examples from the Oriental Orthodox author.
Okay, dude.
This predicate is kicking.
Whoa. Mixed mode monasticism, lay clerical flexibility. We, you know, we've talked about what's the difference between a monk and a priest. Is there a difference? Okay, so we've dealt with, do we really have clergy in the order? Online monasticism. And we've talked about that. So. We need to stop real quick. Within a couple of minutes.
Yeah, we've lost it. Sorry. We're sorry, Blake.
Sorry.
We all want a copy of that art.
Well, see if I do this again. See if I give you a survey.
You're such a good sport.
Okay, we are out of time.
We love you. We wouldn't pick on you if we didn't love you.
Don't cry again on Saturday night.
You will not make me cry. Yeah, no, never again on Saturday. God save the Queen.